Hello, and welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. My name is John Summers Flanagan, and I'm here with my co-host,
Sarah Polinchek.
Today's show is titled Sleep Well in 2017, or whenever you listen to this.
It's always good to sleep well.
It's the first of a four-part series that we have on, you guessed it, sleeping well. This show is sponsored by the Charles Engelhard Foundation and by the National Parenting Education Network. I'm here today with Dr. Sarah, and she is an expert on sleep. I know in Missoula, Montana, many people come to you for sleep consultations. Sarah, how did you first get interested in sleep?
Oh, John, I'll tell you. I remember this story like it was yesterday. My son, who's now 12 and is an excellent sleeper, I have to say, but when he was about 18 months old, he had yet to sleep through the night, which meant that I had not slept through the night for 18 months, and I was very, very tired. This was a day we were traveling. We drove about 3 hours. I probably had no business driving. I was so tired. When we got to our destination, he was so cute. I looked at him, and I got out of the car, and I handed him my keys. First, actually, I pressed the lock button on the keys, locked the car. Then I handed him the keys, shut my door, and went to get him out of the car. It was locked. We were in a really small town. It was getting hot, and it was getting kind of scary. And I was so tired. Otherwise, I would never have done something so silly. What ended up happening is some relatives were there, and they had to take a sledgehammer and break the windows of my car to get my baby out. It was really, really intense. And my mom was there, and we had a cathartic moment. She shook me and said, "You must figure this out and get some sleep." And, you know, it's sort of funny, kind of now, 12 years later, but I was certified with Dr. Harvey Karp's program, The Happiest Baby on the Block. So I knew a lot about babies. I'm a licensed counselor. I kind of knew stuff, but when it came to my own baby, I just was not able to figure it out. So I poured myself into every bit of research I could find and corrected the situation. He was sleeping through the night within about 10 days. Best move I ever made.
Wow. That's an amazing story. And what it illustrates to me is how we all just function worse with disrupted sleep. Oh. And I think you, in your story, obviously you are not functioning very well. You're kind of functioning like a drunk.
Oh, I mean, really. I mean, really. And I can laugh now because we were all okay. But that was a dangerous situation. And I've met with so many parents as a sleep consultant and as a parenting consultant. And the first thing I say now is, how is your sleep? I mean, it's really until the parent is getting rest and the kids are getting rest, that's where you have to start.
And another thing that this story reminds me of is the whole idea of, oh, you're sleeping like a baby. What a ridiculous statement. I think anybody with any sense recognizes that sleep for babies is both natural and challenging, and that the combination is true. And sometimes it does seem so miraculously natural, and they look so peaceful and beautiful when they're sleeping. But when they're not, it is really big trouble.
I have so many pictures of my kids sleeping. I love that state. But, and you know, of all the parents that I've worked with, I worked with a lot of babies and a lot of parents with kids and babies. And there are, every once in a while, we meet some babies that just tend to sleep. And those are obnoxious babies. They get tired, they curl up in a ball, and they just do what they're supposed to do. I don't think that happens all that often. I think for most people, it's a tough thing. Those first few months can be really hard. So this show is not mostly for the obnoxious babies.
Although I'm going to disagree a little bit. I think it is for the parents of the obnoxious babies and maybe the people who work with the parents of the obnoxious babies, because the data say that within the first 10 years of life, about 70% of children will have some difficulties with sleep. That is a huge number.
It's a huge number, yes. It's impacting a lot when 70% of kids are not getting good sleep.
And I think it speaks to why we're doing this show. We want everyone to sleep well. And even if it's not sleeping well, we want people to sleep just a little bit better.
For sure.
So there is lots of research linked to sleep and sleep problems. And so for me, some of the biggest reasons for sleeping well and developing this skill and attitude early is that lack of sleep is related to clinical depression. It's related to anxiety. It's related to immunosuppression or getting sick mm-hmm. easier. It's related to having a worse memory and worse ability to concentrate. And it's even related to having more accidents, which is kind of surprising, sort of like your story.
Right.
Because you're just not thinking as well.
No.
And then it's also, and this is a little bit surprising for a lot of people, it's related to obesity. And so all of these things won't magically go away if you get a good night's sleep, but you have a better chance at addressing all of them and avoiding those problems if you're getting a good night's sleep.
Well, and I'll just add to that, I touched on this a moment ago, but as parenting, I mean, when we're parenting, we want to be our best selves as a parent, most of the time at least. And if we are not rested, we can't do it. And if our kids aren't rested, they aren't able to control their bodies and do what they need to do. So we need to set them up for success. And a good night's sleep will do that.
And you're going to talk a little bit now about some sleep science stuff?
Yeah, one of the things that I think is helpful for everybody to know is that we don't just sleep through the night. We, as adults, we wake up every few hours. We have what's called a partial awakening, which means that, you know, we might roll over, we adjust our pillow, you know, all of those things. But we've learned as adults to get ourselves back to sleep. We can soothe ourselves. It's a skill that we've learned. Babies and kids do that all through the night also. They're waking up every couple hours and having a partial awakening, and they need to have the skill to get themselves back to sleep. What was happening in my situation is that my son was waking up every 2 hours as he was developmentally supposed to and needed me to get him back to sleep. Mm-hmm. So that's how we got into that mess.
Well, excellent. That's great advice. And I'm into the philosophy of a pill is not a skill. And obviously some people will take pills to help with sleep. And I think in some extreme cases, maybe that's appropriate. But what I hear you saying is let's work on developing the skills from early on.
Definitely.
Now, I also know there's this thing called sleep hygiene, and I'm guessing it's more than just taking a shower before you go to bed.
There's two things I think of when I think about sleep hygiene, and one of the biggest ones is building a culture of sleep, you know, appreciating sleep. It seems like in our culture right now, we brag almost about how little sleep we can get by on. It's something that we just don't embrace. We don't love it. I love it, I want to say. I love sleep. I just think I feel so good. But I do hear people all the time saying, oh gosh, you know, you wouldn't want to be caught taking a nap. It's almost something shameful.
I love taking naps.
I do too. There's nothing, hold your head up high. There's nothing shameful about a nap.
Good. I think we also, when you said culture of sleep, I think we have a culture of stay awake. You know, really, mm-hmm. probably worldwide, but certainly in the United States, that the culture is, we don't want to miss anything. You don't
right.
want to miss that movie. You don't want to miss the concert. You don't want to go to sleep and miss the socialization or the mm-hmm. party or whatever it is. And it's really true that this will happen with children as well. And I think sometimes they learn that from their parents, that there's some exciting things that happen after you go to bed.
Right. And I think we need to be, as parents, very aware of the messages that we're sending our kids about sleep. So that's what I mean in our homes, is to look at sleep and talk about sleep as a really good thing that we can embrace and not something that's a chore, something that we don't want to do. Okay. Mm-hmm. So my second thing when we talk about sleep hygiene would be to talk about routine. I think routine is one of the most important things. It gives our mind and our body that cue that we are transitioning from being awake and being excited and happy and fun to now we're transitioning into a more peaceful time, slowing down. Our bodies need to be cued for that.
Yeah, that's great. Now, so we have a culture of stay awake, and that's really kind of the problem. And what you're saying is one of the ways of addressing it is a culture of embracing sleep and valuing it, and then having routine as a way to incorporate that value of sleep.
Definitely. And you know, I mentioned that we have these partial awakenings where we're waking up throughout the night. And when we can have that routine really solid and feel really good about it, it's something we rely on to soothe ourselves, then that's what babies and kids and we as adults learn to rely on in the middle of the night when we have those partial awakenings, is pieces of those routine that we can condense and help ourselves get back to sleep. So
I'm thinking right now we should take time to call the doctor.
Okay.
We have a woman, a physician, Dr. Chelsea Bodner, who is a special consultant to us on this parenting podcast.
Hello?
May I speak with Dr. Chelsea Bodner, please?
This is Chelsea.
Well, Chelsea, I understand that you are in Florida right now. How's the weather?
Well, John, I hate to tell you, but it's about 70 degrees and sunny here and probably a little different than Montana right now.
So maybe about 40 or 45 degrees better than we have it here.
Yes, yes.
And the other big question I have for you before we get started is I'm wondering if you've gotten your children to bed for the night.
So I have, and I think they are soundly in bed, but it would be embarrassing if one of them appeared while we were talking, so I'm hoping they're actually asleep.
Okay, well, that's pretty impressive because I know that you have twin 4.5-year-olds and a 1-year-old, and the fact that you have all of them in bed by 8 p.m. your time is very impressive.
Yes, and important for my sanity.
Yes, absolutely. So, Dr. Bodner, I have a question, and the first question is, how do you get the patients with whom you are working to value the idea of sleep and sleep routines?
Well, John, beyond just educating families, I guess I find there are a couple of perspectives that parents seem to have, maybe without even realizing it, and addressing those can make a huge difference in how they feel about really trying to create, I guess, a culture of sleep in their own homes. Mm-hmm. The first of those, I think, is a belief on the part of parents, again, with maybe not even realizing it, but that their own exhaustion is somehow a worthy sacrifice for their child or for their children. They're acutely aware of how tired they are from getting up with their children, but they think they're doing it for the sake of their children. And in these cases, I really try to work with them to help them realize that transforming their family's sleep patterns isn't a selfish act or goal. It's a gift to their children. And it's every bit as important as healthy food or reading together or all of the other things that conscientious parents are doing.
That is a really interesting perspective, I think, especially because so often in America, there's just that expectation that parents will be exhausted and just kind of power through it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important when you're talking to parents to realize they're trying to do the best thing for their children and helping them to frame difficult times or difficult interactions in that context is really helpful. And the second belief I think that I encounter is that an assumption is that their child will sleep as much as they need to without training or without encouragement. And I guess I try to draw the parallel between helping a child eat healthy food in our culture, which is an environment full of junk food, or mm-hmm. helping a child stay active in a world that is saturated with iPads and iPhones and screens. Healthy sleep in a 24/7 world requires learning, limits, and effort as well.
Yeah, I hear that emphasis on effort. It's just not going to happen naturally.
Unfortunately, no.
And so the next question that I have for you is, what do you recommend for parents for dealing with that natural intermittent awakening that happens throughout the night for children?
So, you know, I know in future conversations, we might have a chance to talk about specific age groups. So I'm just going to say in general, I think it's really important for parents, if they're struggling with nighttime waking, to try to get a sense of what is physiologically normal for their child's age. There really is an argument to be made that it's important to understand sleep and treat sleeping through the night. Like other developmental milestones, there is individual variation, but there are also established normal ages at which different types of sleep, different sleep patterns are typical. So if you can do that research and if you find that your child's sleep pattern is far from the healthy norm for that age, I would really suggest, I guess, getting some professional help maybe to understand why that may be the case. And then realizing back to our conversation about effort, I guess, that changing an established but unhealthy or atypical pattern is going to require consistency and tenacity, but it will be well worth it.
So in this case, you're really talking about knowledge plus effort, consistency, tenacity. Is this the kind of thing that you would recommend for parents if they're concerned to ask their pediatrician about?
I think pediatricians should be a great source of information, especially about the physiologic norms. I know you guys mentioned some other resources and books that can be a good place to go, although in fact, there are a variety of opinions, so that is something to be careful about. So for physiologic norms, a pediatrician is a fantastic place to start.
Okay, good. Now, I know you're not only a pediatrician yourself, but you are also the mother of three children under five. And so tell me about what you have found personally to be most beneficial in terms of pre-bed rituals.
Well, I agree with a lot of the things that you guys have already touched upon, giving enough time, some degree of consistency, and limiting screens. I absolutely agree. We do baths. And I think the combination of all those things, and then I would have to add, sadly, for some formative years, a real sacrifice in terms of your own social life to allow for your children to have that consistency really pays off in terms of setting up a bedtime routine.
Okay, good. So the commitment to the bedtime routine has some costs, like some maybe social fun, but yes, it really pays off in the end. So Dr. Bodner, do you have any stories about, I guess, the attitude that parents have toward getting their kids to sleep early?
I do. When I was pregnant with Nora, who is my 14-month-old, I went to a pizza store. And in the sort of small talk that happens when you are quite pregnant, we started talking about preparing for the exhaustion of when a baby comes. And the man behind the counter just perked right up, looked me right in the eye, and he proudly described to me that he had never had a single issue with his 2-year-old daughter's sleep. And that I thought was fantastic. And he said, I just always let her stay up as late as she could, and then she would just fall asleep on me while we were watching television, about 11 o'clock or midnight.
That is fantastic.
And, he was just really, really proud of this. And, you know, I wasn't sure what to say, because for me, this was like the sleep equivalent of someone just proudly announcing that they had never once had issues getting their child to eat because they just let them eat donuts for every single meal. And I didn't know what to say.
I guess that's really a good example of how far behind we are in terms of the benefits and the health, I guess really the health benefits of sleep, because I think, like you're saying, people might think they're doing something that's okay, but you're saying that's the equivalent of just feeding your kid donuts.
Yes, yes, it has this as devastating a physiologic effect as eating donuts all day long. And but absolutely something that people are able to say with pride because of a lack of sort of basic knowledge.
Right, right. All right. Well, thank you very much for sharing your knowledge, and we will be calling you again in the future.
Oh, I will look forward to it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And now, Sarah, it is time for us to get to the money portion of our podcast. And the money portion of the podcast is, what can you tell parents that is just as valuable as if you were handing out $100 bills on the corner, so that they should really listen to you when you give this advice? And so I'm ready. What's the great advice that's worth the cash?
I have three. So this is $300.
Okay.
Okay. One is that, especially for babies and kids, we want to start that routine 30 minutes before we're hoping our kids to fall asleep. Okay. So it's a transition. They're separating from us. It can be sort of traumatic for young kids. And to have 30 minutes to make that transition and get yourself, your body, and your mind into a calm state is going to be really helpful. So this is helpful for adults too, but especially for kids and babies. The second one is to have a soothing climate, okay? So we want our environment to be one where we're shutting down, we're turning off the lights, I like to use what I call the golf voice. So we're talking in this really peaceful voice.
Nice.
Soft music. I love a nice book before sleep. I think, too, it's just, you know, any of the little kind of cute things that you can do to help little kids. Taking a baby or a toddler or young kids and helping them turn off the lights and say goodnight to the squirrels outside. Mm-hmm. Do any of those things to give them that cue and involve them in the shutting down process is all really helpful.
That golf voice reminded me of maybe at night you're saying, and now I can see that he's crawling into bed. And
yes.
I don't know, I can't tell. Is his head going to hit that pillow or is it not going to hit the pillow?
I'm getting tired just listening to you, John.
All right, so is that all three?
Well, yeah, and I think you were going to talk about bath.
Well, you know, the bath is physiologically the cooling of the body sends us towards sleep. It increases or improves sleep onset. And so if there's an issue with difficulty falling asleep, and often there is, mm-hmm. The warm bath and then the cooling of the body after the bath is sort of an introduction or gives you momentum toward falling asleep. That's true for adults and for kids.
Yeah, really sleep-inducing. So we talked about two things, actually. We talked about, you know, starting 30 minutes prior, having this nice soothing climate. The third thing, this is the biggest and my favorite.
The biggest.
Mm-hmm.
This is it.
Mm-hmm. No TV or screens of any sort 30 minutes before falling asleep.
That is going to be difficult for some people.
It's going to be really difficult, but there's research all over the place that talks about screens and those sorts of light that it's stimulating to the brain. Definitely, we've all seen kids who appear to be in this really peaceful trance when they're watching TV, but it's not a sleep transition type of trance. Their brain is actually being really stimulated, and it doesn't induce sleep the way we think it does, right?
It's like a lot of things when it comes to sleep, that we can survive without it, but we just do better mm-hmm. when you get a good night's sleep. And I think what you're saying is you get a better night's sleep without screen time for 30 minutes before you go to sleep.
Definitely. Do you know what percentage of households in the United States have, where kids have TVs in their room?
You know, I should be able to answer this because you told me before, but I forget. What is the percentage?
Upwards of 70%. So we're hoping that with this podcast, that's going to change.
All right. Well, that's a big goal. You know, you gave us $300 worth of good advice. I've only got 100. But my advice is to watch out for the caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, with the stay awake culture, we have all kinds of energy drinks and wonderful coffees and people in line to get coffee late at night. It's really important to remember that caffeine is a stimulant and it has what we call in science a half-life.
Mm-hmm.
That means that if you consume 200 milligrams of caffeine at noon, you will have 100 milligrams of caffeine in your body at about 6 o'clock. The half-life is about 6 hours. And that means it won't be completely out of your body until midnight. And so you should keep that in mind for the whole family, for the parents and the kids, watch out for caffeine.
Mm-hmm. In all the hidden places where caffeine exists, the chocolate and
yes.
the Coke. And the, yeah, so.
I know you were saying you love caffeine, though.
Only within certain hours.
And you said you love screen time and you love to sleep.
I love sleep the most.
Yes.
For sure.
All right. Now, we have some resources, I think, that we want to point our listeners toward. And I have a couple of general things, but you have a few specific resources.
I do. You know, one thing I want to say is that I like to do this when we're talking about parenting is to just do a little check online about how many resources there are under any particular topic.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I Googled sleep and kids, and there's 9,000 books written about sleep and kids.
Only 9,000?
Right. So one of my favorite sleep resources is Healthy Sleep Habits, Happy Child by Dr. Mark Weisbluth. And one is Good Night Sleep Tight by Kim West, Happiest Baby on the Block by Dr. Harvey Karp. I think that's a really good one for babies in general, not just sleep specific.
That's great. And I have a couple of general resources that are linked to this show. The first is the NPEN or NPEN.org website. That's the National Parenting Education Network website. We will post some information on sleep as well as the complete citations for the resources that you've mentioned, Sarah. And in addition to that, I have my own blog site, johnsummersflanagan.com. It's pretty easy to find. And we will have sleep resources posted there as well.
Excellent.
I guess I'd like to finish by thanking you, Sarah, for being a sleep expert and sharing your knowledge, thanking Dr. Chelsea Bodner for her participation in this podcast, and of course, big thanks to the Charles Engelhard Foundation for supporting our parenting podcast series.
And we want all of our listeners to know that next week we're going to be talking about sleep specific to infants. We're going to take it a little deeper.
So for this week, we hope you sleep well and that you're refreshed and ready to listen to us next week.
Thank you, John. The Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Engelhard Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.